everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show. Get ready for a couple of really warm days. 110 this weekend. What do we got to get through this very, very hot weather before the summer rains come? Happens every year. This year is no different. It is the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. It is Wednesday, June 8th, 2022, in our 12th year with the radio program broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line interview, when we do our telephone interviews, which we will do right at the top of the program today, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble is the longtime public health enthusiast and current executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. His 40 years in public health include more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Public our Department of Health Services, where he has served in various roles, including director from 2009 to 2015. We're fortunate to have Will as one of our two dozen contributors on the Buckmaster Show, and he is the contributor on public health. Will, how are you?
Hey, thanks for the invitation. Everything's going well.
Be prepared, Will. Going to be a very, very hot weekend up in your neck of the woods, up in Phoenix for sure.
Yeah, I have a goal of keeping my evap coolers on. I don't know how well it's going to work with my wife, though.
Do you really still have the evap?
Yeah, I got two of them. It's hard to find them. You know, you want to get one installed up here, they look at you like you're nuts.
I know. We soldiered through for about 20 years. Finally, about 10 years went to the air conditioning. But anyway, 300 cases a day approximately here in Pima County, according to the latest numbers from the state health department. What's interesting, Will, is half those cases are fully, not fully vaxxed people, but at least people who have had at least one shot, and that tells me the latest Omicron variant is a stealth variant. At least it's finding a way to elude some of these immunity levels, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and not just the vaccines, but also previous infections. And so if look at it from another lens, basically every infection right now is either a breakthrough infection among a vaccinated, you know, previously vaccinated person, or somebody who was previously infected, and this is a reinfection. So it's you know, it's breaking through the immunity, whether it was acquired through a vaccine or a previous infection. Now, the good news is that even with this increase in cases over the last 3 weeks to a month, we're not seeing a big increase in hospitalizations. And actually no increase at all in ICU, intensive care unit hospitalizations for COVID. So it's not translating into really bad outcomes, but we are seeing, you know, a continuing number of infections. But at least it's not, you know, people are not getting in bad shape over it.
And it may be, there may be a case that these numbers, it, because so many people are testing at home, they may be 5-10 times more than what's actually being reported. And if that's the case, this could be like a peak for COVID.
Well, if you look at the East Coast of the U.S. and you know, on this wave, we've been about 6 weeks behind, the, you know, them, or at least a month behind them, both on the Omicron wave over the winter and in this run-ups, and they've peaked now, you know, in New York, New Jersey, the Eastern Seaboard. Stands to reason we're probably going to, yeah, I think you're probably right, we're going to peak in June. I don't know if it's quite there yet, and then we'll start to see a decline in infections. But again, it's not, we're not seeing an increase in COVID-related hospitalizations, really.
There is all sorts of news on the vaccine front. We have a new pediatric vaccine. We have a fourth COVID-19 vaccine that is expected to be authorized, the Novavax. Then we've got Moderna talking about perhaps a once-yearly booster that might be available in the fall. Give us your overview quickly, Will, on the vaccine front.
The biggest news is for parents of young kids. They've been waiting all this time to get their little kids vaccinated. And the FDA's advisory committee is meeting next week on the 14th and 15th, and they'll make a recommendation to the FDA director to, I'm sure, they'll recommend emergency use authorization of the vaccine for kids 6 months to 5 years old. And they haven't had a vaccine until now. The providers out there, doctors' offices, community health centers, even pharmacies, can actually order those vaccines now. They're not going to be delivered until the 21st because you need to get the FDA and CDC, rubber stamps first. But the ordering is happening right now. So that's the pediatric vaccine. As you mentioned, Novavax is seeking authorization from FDA. They turned in their data. That's going to happen, and so there'll be another option, a Novavax vaccine, similar to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I don't know how much difference it's really going to make. Many people are going to say, yeah, I'll get a Novavax, but I wouldn't get those others. I just don't see it as really a game changer. And then you did mention that the vaccine and the messenger RNA manufacturers, the Moderna and Pfizer, are pursuing a booster shot that's specifically for Omicron, and that will probably be out in the fall. That's exactly what you just said.
And, I think there's some good news out of this. Everybody that is getting infected right now, they're going to have some pretty good immunity up perhaps even until the Christmas season. And all of these variants coming up are still in the family of the Omicron group, which that's good news, right?
Yeah, they're all in the Omicron family. They become, with each mutation, they become a little bit more contagious. And so these new variants are sort of picking each other off and becoming more dominant. But thankfully, and as we expected, and we talked about this 6 months ago, natural selection, the way evolution works is it tends to favor those viruses that become less lethal and also are more transmissible. And that's exactly what we have been seeing over the last 2 years.
Will, how concerned are you about this monkey pox? What do you want my listeners to know about it? What is your message today about monkey pox?
So on a scale of 1 to 10, my concern is 1.
Okay.
That's the first message I want to get out there. Number 2 is this virus is spread totally different from COVID-19. It's a direct contact type of virus. It causes this unique rash that you might have seen in textbooks when you were a kid about smallpox. It looks like a smallpox type of lesion, and direct contact with those lesions, skin-to-skin contact, then transmits the virus to the other person. And so it's a direct contact thing, so, masks are not a valuable intervention in this case. It's avoiding skin-to-skin contact. But the take-home message is that, remember, we talked about contact tracing during COVID-19.
Yeah.
We used it, but it was not a super effective tool, mostly because COVID-19 is an airborne illness. And contact tracing is really hard to do with that. But contact tracing works great with a direct contact disease like monkeypox. And also, by the way, sexually transmitted infections, gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, those sorts of things. Contact tracing works really well. And so that's what the county health departments are going to be focusing on, is when there's a new case of monkeypox, they find those persons that had direct skin-to-skin contact with the person with lesions and then follow up with those people directly. So it's a job really for public health. But in terms of listeners out there in the world, it's not something that they need to be really too concerned about.
Well, something they do need to be concerned about is Arizona's influenza curve, which seems to be happening at a time when you've got COVID making a peak. A lot of people, myself included, after 2 weeks in Hawaii, came back and really has suffered from allergies. The drastic change from the tropics to the dryness really has hit me hard. So you've got flu, you've got some colds, you've got COVID, and you've got allergies. This conflux happening at a time. You got a lot of sick people right now in Arizona.
And you didn't mention heat-related illness.
Heat-related, yeah, which is going to be a huge issue here this weekend.
Yeah, this is a that's a biggie. So, the influenza, we talked about this last month, I think. The influenza this year had a double peak. We had a peak earlier in the cold and flu season. It went down. It's come back up, but now it's on the way back down again. Still seeing influenza circulating, but that's on the way down. COVID, as you mentioned, is increasing, but again, these are breakthrough and reinfection cases. That's kind of where we are. To be honest, I'm a little more concerned about heat-related illness this time of year than influenza, because it can really catch up with you quickly. You can get dehydrated in a really quick if you've got an outdoor job and aren't focusing on staying hydrated.
All right. Caller Matt is on the line. And Matt, it is time to take the break, but I don't want to hold you through the break. So could you make your comment very quickly, please?
Hey, Will, is anybody tracking the baby formula issue in Arizona? I don't think from the governor's office down to even the city council, anybody is. But is AZDHS doing anything? Bye.
Yeah, you want me to answer now or after break, Bill?
I'd like you to answer right now, if you would, Will, and then we'll take the break.
Yeah, so real quick, the place that the state health department is really working on is the Women, Infant, and Children program, or WIC program. And they serve about 200,000 families or kids within the WIC program, and a lot of the baby formula that's bought is really actually rolls through the WIC program, and so they've been focusing on among their WIC members looking at alternative formulas. In other words, on WIC, you have to buy, because they negotiate prices, you have to buy certain types of products with your WIC benefit. But they're expanding that and looking at different formulaic alternatives. But the supply chain issue is really a national thing at the federal level, and it goes back to, as you probably know, about what happened with the FDA asking for that voluntary shutdown of the plant. But through the WIC program, the states do it, and they actually have a useful website on there that's geared for WIC families, but it also could be useful for other families of young children looking for the right kind of formula for their kids.
All right. When we come back with Will Humble, we'll talk about the nursing home issue here in Arizona. Also, what about firearms and firearm violence? We'll talk a little bit about evidence-based solutions to preventing firearm violence after we take the break. In the break right now, we started off talking about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery. I've been yearning for a piece of their carrot cake now for a couple of days. That yearning will become a reality here, I'm sure, by the weekend. Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They serve breakfast Tuesday through Sunday. Doors open at 6:30. Check out the website, monasdanishbakery.com. Beautiful color photographs of pretty much everything on the menu that will tempt you. You'll be further tempted when you walk in and you look at the bakery case. We love Mona's. I know you will too. More with Will Humble right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Will Humble is the longtime public health enthusiast who is currently executive director for the Arizona Public Health Association. He's the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services, and he's our contributor on public health. A couple of months ago, Will, we talked about an opioid solution or settlement that Arizona and other states were going to get some money. Has that money started to come in?
It's starting to come in. It's over the next 18 years, Arizona stands to get about $600 million. That's a lot of money. But again, spread over 20 years for mitigating the opioid crisis. This was a multi-state lawsuit that was filed by a bunch of states. Arizona was one of the plaintiffs on that, and so we're getting some of the money in, from these drug manufacturers. And in the settlement agreement, state government gets about 40% of the money, but there's also a big chunk that goes to local governments, county health departments, et cetera. I don't think the pipeline has opened yet in terms of the funding, but I know that the county health departments are putting together the plans for how they would like to use that money for, in evidence-based ways. I know you got a terrific health director down there with Dr. Cullen, and I just talked to her the other day, and they're actively looking for the biggest return on investment for those dollars in the coming years. But I don't think the tap is opened yet.
And Dr. Cullen will be our Friday Focus interview here on the show this week. Let's talk about firearm deaths. Is that an area preventing firearm deaths that is this part of the portfolio, in your opinion, of state health directors, like the position you held for 5 or 6 years?
Definitely. And here's the way I look at it, is that the job of the health director is to inform elected officials, both in the legislature and in the governor's office, about what evidence-based practices are available for any kind of public health threat, including firearm violence. And, you know, that's the job of a health director. And I haven't seen a whole lot of that coming out of this health department. But fortunately, you know, we're here, the Public Health Association and others, to really identify those public, those evidence-based practices, policy interventions that work. And there's two major categories: homicides, well, really three: homicides, suicides, and accidents. And suicides are actually a bigger part of the overall pie of firearm deaths. Often you hear more about the homicides, but the suicide part of it's a public health issue too. But fortunately, some of the interventions that we could put together work on both homicides and suicides. Take, for example, a three-day waiting period and background checks. Both of those, the waiting period is effective in preventing both homicides and suicide because it allows a three-day period for someone to either get some other kind of assistance, to get some help, to allow their emotions to cool off so that they don't make they're less likely to make an impulsive decision. That's on the waiting period. On the background check, that's more effective at on the homicide rather than the suicide side of things. There's other interventions around the age of purchasing a firearm. I would argue that, you know, the debate right now is whether it's 18 in most states, whether that should be moved to 21. I would argue from a public health perspective, that number should be 25. Why do I say that? Because the temporal lobe, the judgment lobe of the brain, especially in men, isn't mature until 25. Hmm. And so if you think about purchasing a firearm, using that firearm wisely and safely has everything to do with judgment and your ability to make good decisions. And until your brain is fully formed, you're at a disadvantage to making those good decisions. And so, you know, moving the purchase date out to 21, or we're never going to get it to 25, but the evidence suggests it should be 25, that's an effective intervention for both actually homicide and suicide, the dates that I talked about. So there are tools at the policy level we could implement it, but it would take people at the state legislature and a governor that supports those kind of policies, and sadly we don't have that right now. But there's an election coming up, and we'll see whether voters would like to see people in office that do care more about that.
How concerned should Arizonans be about putting a loved one in a nursing home facility right now, Will Humble?
So you're bringing up an interesting topic here. Just a bit to do a little background on this. The legislature has oversight over one of their jobs is oversight over executive branch agencies, and so they have what's called an auditor general's office, and they do periodic reviews of the performance of state agencies. And back in 2019, the Arizona Auditor General's office looked at the performance of the state health department when it comes to following up on complaint investigations of substandard care at nursing homes. And what they discovered back in 2019 is that the health department was not following up in a timely way on even serious complaints like, you know, neglect and bed sores and those sorts of things. And so they gave the state agency, state health department, five recommendations for improving the regulation or follow-up, at least, on nursing homes. And they did the auditor general did a follow-up on that a couple of months ago, and they discovered that the state health department didn't implement any of the recommendations. And in fact, in a sneaky way, reclassified the State Health Department reclassified high-risk complaints to low-risk. So that they, because on the high-risk, you're supposed to investigate within 10 days. So they just changed the category so that it would appear as though they're following up on complaints quickly. I mean, can you think of anything more sinister than that, is to adjust your performance measures on something as important as following up on complaints at nursing homes? It just really kind of irritated me to see both the lack of attention to detail, the lack of prioritizing complaint investigations at nursing homes, and then doctoring the data and cooking the books to make it look like you were doing a good job. So super irritating to me. But going back to answer your question, how concerned should people be if their loved ones, parents, and so forth are in a nursing home? My suggestion is, you know, make sure you visit as frequently as you can and keep your eyes and ears open and watch for substandard care. And when you see it, make sure you report it, not just to the State Health Department, but to Adult Protective Services. And if you see it continuing, take your loved one out of that and that facility and find somewhere else, because there is no substitute for family members visiting their loved ones in the nursing homes, not just because they're lonesome a lot of times and they want to have visitors, but also because you're the eyes and ears to make sure that they're getting the right kind of care. And there's people out there, your listeners right now, shaking their head. And he's right about that. I've seen some bad stuff in nursing homes, and it's just sad to see that it's not a priority right now. We're going to have a new governor in 208 days. Maybe the next director will make it a higher priority.
All right, Will, good advice. Stay hydrated, and it's very important, like you say, everybody needs to stay hydrated. We've got some really, really hot temperatures coming up. Will Humble, we will talk to you in July. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Bill. Adios.
All right, coming up next, Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, not on the live line, but with me in studio, which is good news. Paul's here. He'll be on in a few minutes.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We love Green Things. This is the perfect time to go buy Green Things, to get your beautiful plants in the ground before the rains come. And we hope that will happen maybe in a couple of weeks. Maybe I'm being very optimistic. Usually these really hot days can kind of fire up some thunderstorms. So maybe we'll get lucky. 13-acre site, 3384 East River Road, beautiful location. Their website's greenthingsaz.com. They're also have a sister business with all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, Zocalo Village, right there on site. Their website, zocalovillage.com. Our live line when we do our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The vast majority of the time when we have our monthly interview with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, we do have to rely on the live line because Councilman is usually right in his lunch break from school. But he's not in school right now, so we can get him here in June and maybe next month as well, get him in here into the studio. We'll see. But Councilman Cunningham, good to see you.
Bill, thanks for having me on, and I should be in Tucson next month.
Good, good. So we'll hopefully get you back in studio. Let's get right at it. We've got a lot of ground to cover. There was some news about what has currently and has been ongoing since COVID began, free bus rides for anyone really on SunTrans.
So right now we've been doing free buses since the outset of COVID, like shortly after the outbreak. We received federal funds to do that. It doesn't cause a hit to the general fund budget, but a lot of jurisdictions did. There were about 30 or 40 cities that either reduced or made free transit in some way, shape, or form. Some of those cities are starting to bring back fares. I know that even Los Angeles is starting to bring back fares. I think San Francisco has. There's a few still holding out along with us. We're going to extend that free price until December. But in that 6 months, we're going to take a look at how we really want to do fares, how we really want to do transit. We're going to examine kind of all the different options. The idea is that if somebody needs a ride, we want to be able to get them where they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be able to do that.
In a safe manner.
In a safe manner, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a safe manner, in a healthy manner, in a manner that's safe for the drivers, in a manner that is actually pleasant for everybody involved. And that's kind of the challenge. Let's be honest, that's the challenge. I mean, one of the emails I got about the free buses was, please don't raise the fares. Please don't bring the fares back. I love the bus, but for the love of Pete, please don't let people use drugs on the bus. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, okay, that's good input.
Yeah.
But and that's kind of and I'm not saying that people are using drugs on the bus because we have free fares. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's basically the gist of the conversation, and it's a conversation we have to have. I think we're going to have a good solution and a package of some kind that keeps our ride of value, allows us some financial stability with our bus system, but at the same time gets people where they need to go. And I think if we can achieve those three goals, we'll have a very responsible and quality transit system in Tucson.
Do we have a transit policing authority?
We do not. We don't have a transit authority the way that other folks do.
Because there are like other places would have a dedicated policing operation for transit.
So we looked at that. There's like we could do a specialized CSO, a community service officer, mm-hmm. they wouldn't be on every bus, but they'd mm-hmm. go from different buses and the streetcar. Yeah. We've looked at that route. We've looked at different ideas and different discussions on how to ensure that the bus is safe and convenient and does the things it want to do. You know, the funny thing is that right before COVID, we had a pretty comprehensive plan to change some things for the bus, and it everything kind of went sideways. It was one of the things when we passed the budget last night, that was one of my major points, was that last year was a COVID year, and next year is kind of going to be a normal year to some degree. But this year, really this last like 18 months has been kind of in limbo. Every decision's been fluid, from financial to policy to everything has been fluid. We've been fluid all the time. And so we really don't, this budget process was kind of a much more conventional budget process, to say the least, but it was still kind of fluid because we were coming out. And I hope people caught the gist of it, but when we did, we're going to pass this budget, or I think we passed this budget last night. We passed the compensation package last night and kind of finalized everything. And the reason we did that was because it was on a kind of a different process than usual, is because everything this last year was fluid.
What was the final number on the money package for the budget? Is this a big increase over the last year?
Absolutely. I think we came in at about 1.6 to 1.8 total, and that's including your enterprise funds, your water.
Billion.
And then the general fund has grown. Since I've been on the council, the general fund has gone from $520 to north of $600 million.
Is it attractive for employees, this package?
I think it is. I mean, I think we're competitive. We're trying to be as competitive as possible. We've done multiple different fixed compensation programs to be on the level and on market with other groups. We just raised the lifeguard pay. We raised 911 pay. That was where we were having a lot of attrition. We've raised police and fire pay. Well, we've raised different pay in just about every single department. There's one group right now that we're talking to. They're looking for a little more market equilibrium. I don't know if I want to put them on blast yet, but I'm talking to some of our drivers of the heavy equipment, and we may have some variances there. So everybody's trying to look in. The police departments probably want a new market study because everything changed during COVID. So I think there's some – everybody's looking at kind of how we stay competitive. As a councilman, my standpoint is I intend to be.
How many pools do we have and how many will be open?
So right now we have 19 pools. 10 will be open. We have 20 pools and 10 are open, but at abbreviated hours. Every week over this summer, as we keep bringing lifeguards on as fast as we can, you'll see a pool here or there. I'm sure – I just heard yesterday Jacob's pool will be open, so we now have a pool in Ward 3 open. I'm pretty confident that by the end of June, at least for the month of July, Palo Verde Park pool will be open in Ward 2. So three of my pools out of four – and Ward 2 will be open. So I'm pretty confident we'll get there. What we did was we had a job fair. We actually went out to Saguaro High School. I teach P at Gridley. So a lot of my former students are freshmen and sophomores at Saguaro, and I see them in the neighborhood. And so I told them, hey, what are you doing this summer? And a couple of them said, hey, we'd like to be lifeguards. So we actually arranged to have aquatic staff meet the swim team participants and the swim coach at Saguaro to try to sign up kids to lifeguard this summer, to get them trained, to get them properly certified.
Was it successful?
I think we're going as fast as we can. It seemed to have bared some fruit because we've onboarded since that process, which was only a couple weeks ago. We've already onboarded another 21 lifeguards and have 10 more in the hopper. So I think our push is successful.
What are the qualifications to be a lifeguard? You don't have to be just a young person.
No, not at all. As long as you're a strong enough swimmer and can tread water for a certain number of minutes and can swim a lap without stopping and are strong enough to guide someone into the pool, then you can be a lifeguard. You also have to be certified in CPR and adult lifesaver. But there's all kinds of different programs. Ours are free. Next summer, we may even train people in advance through the whole school year and have an actual program that kind of gets us a little better prepared. I will say I wasn't excited to learn how short we were in lifeguards, but I think they're going as fast as they can. They're making the best effort they can right now. They've been responsive once we kind of set the alarm bells off, so I appreciate that. But I think we should have been a little more prepared. Though, to be fair, multiple jurisdictions in both Maricopa County and here in Pima County have had trouble finding lifeguards, even the YMCA. So
they make a little money, right? I mean, it's...
So our lifeguards start at $16.75 an hour. But
that's pretty good.
Yeah, but here's the cool part.
Okay.
So if you say you lifeguard all summer and you're really good and we like you and you automatically say, oh, hey, I'm going to go to college and come back, The following year, you can probably get your own pool. And when you get your own pool and you're a pool supervisor, you kind of like a senior lifeguard, you move up to like 18, almost 18 bucks. Well, that's nice money, man,
yeah.
Especially if you're 16, 17 years old,
yeah.
Or 18, 19 years old. So even my son is signing up to be a lifeguard, a couple of other friends. So we've hit the pavement really trying to make sure we have coverage every pool.
Just got a news release from the city about a new water director in the city of Tucson. Water is huge. The water director position is a huge position. Tim Tomier used to have that position, but then he kind of got bumped up and works as Mike Ortega's right-hand man. So it says the city had announced just today, new director.
John Kamik, I made the motion to confirm him. He's been the interim director for over a year.
Is he pretty good? I mean,
he's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. We'll talk about, you know, we've been lucky with these water directors, man. We've had some significant superstars. They've got vision, they've got creativity. They understand how we have to protect our future and our water rights.
Yeah, I mean,
with that, in fact,
sustainability in this place with the climate change? Come on.
I mean, so here's the deal. The Lake Mead is now at, I want to say 1046, which is 60 to 70 feet below normal.
Yeah.
And
New York Times today, Salt Lake City, the Great Salt Lake is drying up.
Yeah. So John Kamik, before he got confirmed last night, was in Northern Arizona at the negotiating table for our water rights, drove all the way back to show up at like 7:30 p.m. to hear his confirmation.
Really?
The guy's a rock star. He's half engineer, half lobbyist, and half policymaker. And
weird spelling on his last name. So it's Kamik, and it's K-M-I-E-C.
Right.
I would never guess Kamik.
Easy to pronounce, but spelled funny. But yeah. he's a tremendous asset to the city, and we're lucky to have him board.
All right, let's take a break right here. More with Paul Cunningham. A lot of city news today, so very serendipitous to have Paul with us in studio, the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Our Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. We're so proud to have a great lineup of sponsors like Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. When it hits June 1st, we really talk about this a lot. Kind of the Buckmaster Show guarantee. We have a little fun with it. We say, and it's usually pretty darn accurate, 10 degrees cooler in Silver City than it will be in the Tucson area. And sometimes it's 15 degrees cooler, but it's usually about 10 degrees cooler. Like right now, 93 over there in Silver City. It's about a mile high elevation, only a 3-hour drive from Tucson. Great place to get away. You can still do some outdoor hiking. It's just a great summertime destination for you. So think about it. Put it on your weekend calendar to kind of get away. The website is southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our conversation, our monthly conversation with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. We've been covering a lot of city news, a very busy agenda last night, including moving forward with a new city hall for Paul Cunningham's ward. This is good news, Paul.
Well, it actually started with, it goes back to like 2019, and I was really worried about some of the commercial office space that we had in Ward 2. We had a lot of it.
Where are you now?
I'm right now at Speedway and Prudence, but just in Ward 2 in general, we lost Geico to the new project right down the street from here.
Yeah.
And that was one of our biggest primary employers in Ward 2, and we lost all that office space. So I had two, because Center East at Pantano and Broadway, which I'd always hoped to find some clients for and wanted to help the commercial realtors. I think Mark Irvin was the lead listing agent for years. He did a great job, like with spit and glue getting people in there. But the bottom line was that I was worried about it. So I asked him about it, and we looked at it, and we thought, boy, that'd be great if the city would ever move in there. But, you know, it just wasn't meant to be, the budget, things of that nature. No kidding, about a week before we really went into lockdown the first time, George Larson and Dick Lubke show up at my office. Dick, as you know, is the one of the founders of Pima Medical Institute. George Larson's a longtime real estate.
Yeah, he's been around forever.
He's a longtime real estate. I guess you could call him a tycoon, but really, mm-hmm. I don't think he'd like that.
Guru.
But he's just an amazing Tucson, an amazing guy. They show up at my office and they say, "Hey, any chance that Desert Christian High School, which is right next door to Ward 2, mm-hmm. can buy City Hall?" Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, what we could do is if you talk to Mark Irvin, maybe you could buy this Center East and we could swap. Mm-hmm. And it took some time and mm-hmm. a lot of discussions later and a lot, I mean, there's a lot of complications. I mean, between square footage and acreage and finished space and environmentals and all those things that go into, especially on a public asset land swap. Mm-hmm. You want to be very careful. You want to make sure it's good for the public. It's good for everybody. But I think we have a deal. There's a few I's and T's to be dotted, but I'm pretty confident this is going to happen. And I really want to thank the city staff and Mr. Larson and Mr. Lubke for kind of getting it all done. And then they actually brought in Carrie Sylvan to help kind of finish the deal on their side. And we have an amazing staff with Mike Rankin.
So what's the footprint of this, and where again is it going?
So
to
we're going to be at Center East, which is at Speedway and Pantano. And
okay.
it's about a 9 to 10 acre site, and there's an unfinished site behind it that we probably will make into some type of public space. Then my space, the fire station is not moving, for those who are worried, the fire mm-hmm. station is not moving, but mm-hmm. everything else, including the 10-acre lot in the back, will become part of Desert Christian High School. And I believe Desert Christian is going to build some sort of like track facility, mm-hmm. and that track will actually be open to the public when the kids aren't using it, so mm-hmm. people, the neighbors, can use it as a walking track.
This will be a community space. You'll have meeting rooms.
It is a win-win-win for everybody, and Desert Christian has really demonstrated they want to be a great community partner for Tucson.
Mm-hmm. So this could happen when?
I think I'm hoping the move happens by December. I'm hoping that we get all these things done. But you know, you make these timetables, and then all of a sudden there's a burial ground, or there's mm-hmm. a groundhog, or it's whatever. So I don't want to jinx it. Yes, I'd like to move by the end of the year, maybe probably early 23, but we'll see.
So the COVID money kind of goes away for municipalities like the city of Tucson for this new budget plan, which goes in effect July 1st. A lot of that federal money going away?
To some degree, what we did was we kind of squirreled away some of ours and put it in tranches, so we had 3 or 4 years sustainability on ours. So I think some of, like, our ARPA money, we've got another 2 years on. So I don't think some of it, yeah, the short answer is some of it is going away, but a lot of it's still coming. So I think we protected ourselves that way. And kudos to the manager and his staff and the mayor for really kind of making sure that our eyes weren't bigger than our stomachs, if you will. And we were very deliberate.
Hey, whatever happened to kind of trying to fix up some of the medians and stuff? Did that money run out?
No, it's still there. We're doing it slowly but surely. I mean, one of the things you'll see right now in Tucson with roads is for the first time in probably 3 decades, we are fog sealing roads that were recently reconstructed. So what we're doing is we're doing pavement preservation. In other words, you can rebuild a road. If you don't put oil on that road, well, not oil, it's an emulsion that reseals it.
It's going to crack real.
It cracks real quick.
Yeah.
It's only got about a 4-year life.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a bunch of roads right now that we did over the last 5 years, and we're out there preserving them. And all the corridors that have been done in the last 10 years have all been emulsified, except for somebody out there is listening is going to say, you haven't done the north-south part of Kolb yet from Tanque Verde to 22nd. And they're right, but it's coming. So it's on our mind. We're doing it every day. And we're making sure that not only did we repair the corridors, we're going to keep the corridors. And our next task is repairing the residentials. We're doing them a little bit at a time. Again, almost half of Ward 2, where I represent, almost half the neighborhoods, I'd say about one-third of the neighborhoods at this point, have been redone.
And for those that did vote, it was kind of the small turnout that the vote by mail, but those that did vote said, hey, we want to invest in roads.
Right. I mean, it passed 3-1. I mean, passed, you know, 75 to 25 or something crazy like that. So I think everybody was pretty confident. We weren't actually raising taxes. It's already there. It just gives us, and we've been prudent, good stewards with that money for the last 5 years. We keep, you know, you're always going to have potholes and issues. But if you take a look at the OCI, which is a rating system that roads have, and you compare it from 2011 to now, we did the job. And I'm real proud of the work the city's done.
How does it affect RTA next?
I don't know how.
What's your honest opinion?
I don't think it'll affect RTA next too much. I think RTA next is ultimately, or RTA next hope is going to be a package that's worthy of the city and worthy of Pima County. But I think again, we've got to be deliberate in how those discussions progress over the next 18 to 24 months. And truth be told, RTA Next has got to minimize the amount of projects that they have to slate up to the RTA Next. Mm-hmm. I mean, those will get the right of first refusal, but if there's more than 2 or 3 projects on there, they're going to have a tough time with the voters. I'm not worried that, look, we got great people at RTA. It's a good concept. We do that. We need that regional transportation. But the bottom line is that the more projects that don't get delivered, the more people are going to be sour on it.
But you're still saying it's very doable if it's the right.
Look, bit. I was the king of talking. I was the king of talking tough about RTA.
I know.
But the bottom line is that they're trying.
Yeah.
And so let's keep working with them. If the product's crap, then I'll say it is. But right now they're trying.
Okay. Paul Cunningham, good to see you. My best to your father. Okay.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Known him for so long, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing great, and he's enjoying retirement and fixing his cars. And, you know, I every
George
day
George Cunningham, what a great guy that what a crown jewel for this area. Tell him hi. Gotta run. Thank you, Paul.
So much.
All right, that's going to do it on behalf of Councilman Cunningham. Bill Buckmaster saying great day to you.